Welcome to the Edible Valley Podcast. I am Blaine Prose.
And I am Jonathan Fraser. And we would like to once again invite you to join with us on our continuing ongoing culinary adventure of our Edible Valley.
On today's episode, we are talking with Leslie Stav, president of the North Vancouver Island Chefs Association. But before we get to the interview, what's been going on in the your world, John?
Well, it's been another busy, busy week for me. Slowing down a bit with the kids going back into school, but the restaurant's still hopping, so I've been running around and cleaning up a few things from the summer that have been a little neglected. So that's a good thing. We've also been super busy with the with other little events. Like this weekend, we did the Chef's Day down at the Farmer's Market, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was busy, busy, busy down there.
You were down there watching, and we had Leslie down there with us. She was kind of keeping everyone in line and making sure it all went really smooth.
Inside of what was it we said? Whether I was troubleshooting or shooting trouble.
Yeah, I guess I should have said welcome to the...
Thank you.
Welcome to the Edible Valley, Leslie. I sorry I gapped on that. It's good to have you here. Yeah, that was fun. There was a whole bunch of people there. You guys had a lineup of people wanting to eat what you were cooking. And
yeah,
John
we
was running around with a wheelbarrow picking up food from different vendors.
And Shaw Community Cable was down there videotaping us and taking clips of everyone working away. And so we had some great dishes come up. I know we were working with some tuna. And we had some great chicken that we're doing a bunch of things with. I can't. There's so many things going on. I don't even think I can remember half the dishes that went out. I know we did some nice greens with a strawberry salsa on top.
Yeah, I think we made a list and it came upwards to about 30 items.
30 items,
So I actually documented the routes because, of course, if we can't remember them today, we certainly won't remember them next year.
Yeah, that's true.
So, no, it was great because we just went out with a wheelbarrow and we had chips, so we would actually buy from the vendors out there. So it's not like... So they were actually making some money off this too. Yeah. And so we got to, they were really excited to showcase a lot of their products. And they were like, oh, you got to try this and you got to do this. And
a lot of them came back afterwards and commented on the fact that something that we had picked up that was maybe a little bit obscure and we cooked with it. And then all of a sudden they were sold out of it because everyone was like, wow, you can do that with that.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So that was,
that's perfect. That's exactly the way it should work.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to want to have you guys there every week.
Oh boy.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah. No kidding.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, for sure.
It was also great exposure. We had some first year students who've only got like a week under their belt in the culinary arts, and they actually came out to get their feet wet and work with some people like John, and they were so excited to be able to work with side by side with a chef as opposed to, you know, looking at them from afar or whatever.
Oh yeah,
no they kidding. Actually really enjoyed it. They had a blast.
It was great to watch them too, and you could see them asking questions and wondering what to do with stuff and how to do it. So it was it was great time. So
yeah, I looked at the melee in there and I went, well, I told John I would help, but I don't know. I think I'd just get in the way. And, and I mean, I have a bit of experience in the kitchen. I can imagine a first year with a week's.
Yep. No, they jumped right in. They had no fear.
No fear at all. Yeah. It's great. Yep.
Really good. Yeah. I had fear.
Yeah. Well, and the thing about it is that it's getting your creative stuff going immediately, right away. Because you're standing there, you can't say, well, just a minute, I'll go check a recipe or something like that.
Yeah, you just
gotta You've just got ingredients and you just got to go with it.
Yeah.
I know James pulled off, was the pancakes right at the very beginning.
Yeah.
And that was great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So there's some great ideas popping up there. Yeah. What was it? Well, we got those lemon tarts from Heavenly Goodies.
Yeah.
And then, was it Tina? She had a nice, she sautéed some apples with a little bit of thyme on there.
Yes.
And it was fabulous. And people were just going crazy about it. So there were some great things and some people jumping in there and just going for it. So
well, and some of them have never seen a crab apple. I know it sounds very simplistic, but just being able to actually cook with it as opposed to doing jelly or something like that, it's actually using it and eating it right away.
Yeah,
for sure. I actually didn't really get to sample very much. I had one little sample that Tina gave me that had sautéed onions and peppers and sausage.
Oh.
Italian sausage, I think.
Yeah, Island Bison.
Yeah. So that was the only thing I had because I was off networking and talking to so many vendors and friends and people I know. And
I think I line jumped and took pancake.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They were little tiny ones. It was nice.
But, yeah, I had a wonderful day. It was lots of fun. Yeah.
Well, that actually segues into the next event that we got involved with. With the Chefs Association had their first meeting of the, as we like to call it, of the year.
Yeah.
So after summer get togethers, make mm-hmm. sure we all survived. And we were lucky enough to go up to Island Bison yeah. and check out the bison and water buffalo and pigs and have a little barbecue. It was pretty impressive. They are amazing creatures, I must admit.
So, oh, absolutely. They're huge.
Yes.
They're huge.
And intimidating, man.
and I know that on the tour that Mark and Lisa gave you, and is that they're both so passionate about what they're doing that the information that came at you in that hour was probably almost overwhelming. But it's amazing how much will stick with you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And for how short a period of time they've been doing it, very mm-hmm. knowledgeable.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm just amazed that those creatures can jump 5 feet.
Basically, if they can see it, they can clear it. So. Yeah. A whole different respect for it.
Oh, man. Yeah, when that one started walking over to the fence when we were walking by the herd, I thought, okay, this isn't bad. Then all of a sudden, all of them started coming. I don't know, bring it back up a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe this isn't such a good idea.
Yeah. It was very overwhelming, but they're beautiful and they're huge and...
And for being a wild animal, they seem very peaceful. So I wouldn't want to turn my back to one. But
no.
And
that's pretty much what he says is that, you know, treat them with a fair whack of respect. But they certainly don't look like they're going to be aggressive.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then on the flip side is the water buffalo who come up to you and want to be petted. And
I thought that was a dog. Like, it's a really big dog.
Like, it acts like dogs.
I was amazed. Like, I thought I could throw a stick for it and it would run for it. They were so friendly and
very playful.
Playful animals,
So is it. Yeah. No, it was very good a social gathering as well as lots of information. Mm-hmm. The barbecue was great.
You can't go wrong with bison burgers. They seem to cook up really good. So,
and that the weather sort of pretty much cooperated. It only had a torrential downpour once you were actually finished cooking out there.
Yeah.
So that was perfect.
So it was just my jacket that I left outside that got wet.
Oh, that was your jacket.
No, that was mine, yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah.
It sure got cold last night, though. Did you guys have any frost at your house?
Well, actually, that's a great segue into my next adventure today, because I just keep going.
Yeah.
I got invited out to eat more sprouts out to their farm today, so I got to do a little tour of the organic farm there. It's really not that big of a farm. It's only just under 4 acres, but it's amazing what they're producing out of that little area. And we were touring one of the... Hubbard squash, and you could see all the leaves had crumbled because the frost had hit them. So I think we got our first frost last night. So.
Yeah, incredible that it's just beginning of September and we got a frost.
Yeah, I biked to work this morning and it was early mornings and it was cold.
Yeah,
so we got there.
It's cold.
It's been a busy day. I know you probably did some more canning this weekend, I guess, getting ready for the winter.
I did, I made some applesauce on Sunday. I experimented making pickled eggs, which I've never done before. And I dehydrated more apples. So of the 4 bags that I picked the weekend before, I've only gone through one of them so far. So I'm a little bit nervous. But I borrowed a juicer, so I'm going to probably juice 2 bags of them and put that in the freezer.
Nice.
And then I'll make some more applesauce and... maybe some more chips and they're all over the place right now. So it's good free food.
Yeah.
If you can take advantage of that. So
there's lots out there right now. So we definitely learned that at the market this weekend. So,
absolutely. Yeah. No, it's good.
So we might as well get on to now. The reason we're here is to sit down and talk to Leslie. We want to learn a little bit about her and a little bit about the North Vancouver Island Chefs Association.
Okay.
Now, you're currently the president, which means you're in charge of, I guess it would be one of the smaller...
It's small.
Smaller?
It's actually really active, though.
Well, what I wanted to say, too. It's one of the smaller ones for area, but we have a very active group that's really energized. And
in comparison to the size of the area that we're in, the number of people that actually live here, then we're actually not too bad a size. Because mm-hmm. there's a lot of the big cities that aren't as big as us.
So. Right. So the North Vancouver Island Chefs Association, it basically encompasses from Bowser to the end of Vancouver Island.
Mm-hmm. And it also includes Powell River.
And Powell River. Yeah. And so it's basically just a collection of chefs who...
Chefs, students, associates. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And cooks, I'm including them.
Right. Yeah. So it's a group, and who's welcome to be a part of this organization?
Well, at this point, we're looking at people who are either working in the food industry, or are retired from the food industry in some capacity. Now, that said, we do have a category. We've been working with people who have a really strong desire to work with food. But don't necessarily make their living at it.
Right. So it's more of a part-time fun thing for them that mm-hmm. they want to learn. So,
yeah.
Which is great for the chefs because most chefs out there like to teach.
Yep.
And sort of show what they know. So.
Yeah. Well, also just always working with somebody new, you get new ideas. You know.
Yeah.
That's how we thrive. That's how we grow. That's how we change. Mm-hmm. Is somebody comes at you with something different, a different way of doing something.
Now, that's one of the major reasons that I got involved, and mm-hmm. I guess probably yourself. Mm-hmm. How did you get involved with the Chefs Association?
I actually joined in Vancouver about 10 years ago, and I was an executive chef at a catering company, and it was more of a good move. I had been around it for a long time, but I hadn't been a member. And I just felt that it was probably, I was working in a very isolated area. Not, I was in the city, but just in terms of being on my own. And I needed the networking. I needed the, as we say, the input of mm-hmm. other people. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I pretty much started with, so it was in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. And then you moved over here to... Yeah. North Vancouver Island, that was 5 years ago, is it?
Six years ago this fall. And that was actually, I went back to my mentor and told him that I was moving over here. And he is a past president, and I was very involved in the Chefs Association. And he actually told me to come and see Ronald. He said, you will like him, you will like working with him. Hmm. So that's what I did.
That's how.
And then he hired you and...
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And now you're president.
Yeah. Well, that was almost, I know, what was it, my second meeting when I came in?
I think
to meet
so.
You guys, and Hansi said, oh, yeah, you know, you're going to be the next president. I still remember that. It's like, what?
What did I get into?
Yeah.
Because you started off as the membership director.
Yeah.
Because you actually took that position
from
me. I took
it from you, yep.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Working with computers is sometimes a challenge, I think, for both of us, but we've learned lots.
Yes, I can definitely attest to that, because it's always a challenge to keep track of where all the chefs are and what they're doing and who they're involved with, because
they move constantly.
It's a constant move from one place to the next. They get tired, so they want to try something new. So
Yeah. And then you moved into VP when... I took the membership.
That's correct.
And then basically you decided you just wanted to stay there.
It's a nice spot here, actually. Yeah.
You were quite happy with it. You said, this is about what I want to spend.
Yeah, I can volunteer when I need to. And I get distracted quite easy, so I miss out on some of the events. So
Not to mention that 90 hours a week, you put in at the cafe.
Exactly. And that was at that point the biggest thing that you were dealing with. It was like, no, I can't do that.
Yeah, it's a lot of work to manage a kitchen. So
So
I'm always impressed with the people that get involved in the association, because it's really
and
looking
do both.
At do both. It's getting into more, right?
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And currently you're working at the Kingfisher Inn.
I am.
And you are doing... I'm going to make you say the position.
Oh, chef de tenade. Right. Yeah, because both of you are wimps.
Yeah, both of us are not good with French at all. Yeah.
But generally speaking, I go in, I work part-time. I work when they're busy. I don't work if it's not busy. Because I have put probably 25 years into the industry, and I have missed all those weddings, all those birthdays, all those important events in my own life, mm-hmm. that my family felt that it was time to put that aside and to realign one's priorities.
Right.
Yeah.
So I do still work, but if I have something that's important, I say no.
Right.
That's what it affords me, that freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's tough to say no. That's mm-hmm. always my
yeah, thing. Yeah, absolutely.
There's always something happening, and yeah. you always want to support your team, right?
So. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. But, you know, I also am looking at the fact that just physically, this is a very, very demanding job. Mm-hmm. I've seen people who are over 60 working the line in that, and it's tough.
Oh, man.
Your knees are gone, your ankles, your back, and it's very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once your body starts breaking down like that, so,
mm-hmm.
no.
It's just like any other trade. You
yes.
do something for so long, and you just get those repetitive injuries. And
Yeah.
yeah. It's yeah. tough. It's yeah. very tough. So to work part-time. I work when they're busy, and also I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get burnt out as much as, you know, I would if I was working full-time.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's a good balance.
Yeah. yeah.
You've also taken on other things. You were an mm-hmm. instructor at the North
the
Island
College. Yep, I did that for 3 months last winter.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun driving back and forth in wintertime.
Of course.
really early and long days. And that was an adventure. That was a challenge working mm-hmm. with it because I hadn't done something quite like that. Even though I've been, as you said, chefs love to teach. And we've been doing it ever since day one. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We show people because it seems to be the type of industry where, because it's so universal, everybody feels comfortable asking you something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike a lot of jobs where you wouldn't dream of asking someone, well, how do you do that? Most people do feel comfortable with that,
mm-hmm.
and they'll ask you, and so therefore it opens the door for you to do that easily.
It's a lot of great conversations you can have with people just about food. Everyone likes to talk about food, so
mm-hmm. yeah, for sure.
It's always fun.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and everybody remembers really great things that they ate. Usually
yeah.
all the environment and everything else that was going on around them.
Yeah. I always say that when you go on a travel, you always remember where you ate or what
mm-hmm.
you had. So
mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
That's
absolutely.
One of the things. Like you saw some amazing pyramid or something like that, but the
yeah.
food you ate down there too is always sticks right out.
Yep. Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Maybe it's just because of this podcast and networking with people, but it's all I ever seem to talk about with people is food. And I'm not even a chef. I'm just out there talking
yeah.
different people, I guess, in the business, and then what I'm doing as far as my canning and preserving and stuff, I'm always talking about that. So it's just like, it seems like my whole conversations are revolving mm-hmm. around it lately.
Well, you've done what we have, is that you've opened the door and you've suddenly realized what you thought was a room is actually a warehouse.
Yeah.
And there's all this stuff you don't know.
Yeah.
And it's so exciting and so much fun to go and learn about all that.
Mm. Oh, yeah, it is. It's amazing what I've been able to accomplish in the last 3 or 4 months
mm-hmm.
with the people I've met and the things I've done myself as far as my own skills.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. I'm just having a lot of fun.
Yeah. So. Well, especially with the canning and that sort of thing. That's something that is, it's kind of missed a generation almost. Mm-hmm.
It's almost yeah. that lost art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I'm bringing it back, because my grandmother used to do it, but my mother didn't.
Yeah.
And so I've kind of gotten this, I don't know, it's
yeah.
in me and I want to do it. And so I'm doing it.
When I was first married, my husband and I actually bought a case of peaches and went and visited his mom, which would be the age of your grandmother,
right?
And got her to teach us how.
Right. Yeah.
At that time, even though I wasn't cooking at that time, that's not what I did for a living or anything.
Right.
But it was just something that we wanted to learn, and that's what we used to do. We used to do all our own peaches and apricots and
yep.
applesauce, as you say. And
yep.
But none of his siblings and none of my siblings at that time did that.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a not a lost art so much, but it's just, I think people are getting more into it again now. Mm-hmm. They're getting more aware of the food politics and local, supporting mm-hmm. local and just doing more for themselves. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it does taste better. It's funny because one of the very first recipes that I found that I liked that became part of what you would call your personal repertoire, I'm sure you have some,
right.
your go-tos,
right, yeah.
and was a peach cream pie.
Oh, yeah.
And I made it with my own canned peaches.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so funny because people would ask for the recipe, and I could not give it to them because nobody canned their own peaches.
Right.
So
yeah.
they, you know, I mean, it's like full stop.
Yeah.
The closest you could come is that if you actually took fresh peaches and poached them slightly,
right.
you would get close to it.
Yeah, right.
But that was it. You know, and try and explain that to somebody.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have to get that recipe because you did some peaches just.
Yeah, you did some peaches. Yeah.
Well, I still have it. That's yeah. it. Yeah, no, absolutely.
No, and it's funny, too, because I remember not long ago somebody asked me what my beef jerky recipe was. I go, a recipe? I'd just throw a bunch of stuff in a bowl and mix it up, and then I throw it in the dehydrator until it's dry. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just play with it, experiment, have fun. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I use Google a lot, and I ask different people who I know have done some of those things too, but I just kind of put it all together in my head, and whatever yeah. seems right, that's what I do.
Yeah. So. Documenting is something we're particularly poor at sometimes. Mm. I know over the years I've sometimes actually ended up having a sous chef brought in just to write as you're doing something.
Right.
Because to try and do both, you know, and it's like you're literally not in a trance, but so much you're being creative, and to stop and to write everything
yeah,
down, it's
oh
just
yeah.
like you're just
yeah.
not there.
Yeah. yeah.
My favorite question is, what's in the soup?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. And nowadays, this is a lot more serious. It becomes really, really difficult. It, you know, is it dairy? Is it not?
Oh,
is
yeah.
it, you know, I mean, there's yeah. so many questions.
Yeah.
I know there's salt and pepper.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure about that.
And if it's tomato, I'm pretty sure I put tomatoes in there.
Yeah, if
yeah.
it's chicken, there's probably some kind of chicken in
yeah.
it.
Yeah, but how much of those ingredients?
Maybe.
Just
maybe
enough
not.
To make maybe. It taste right.
Yeah.
But cream and broccoli soup may have chicken in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
yeah, yep. it's can be complex. With
mm-hmm. And especially doing it, the way you say is it's like part of the whole utilizing product is also you take that into your kitchen, and as you see something that needs using, that's what you use.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it may not be there the next time you go to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and so it becomes even more difficult to keep track of.
Yeah, lately I've been doing a lot of stir frying because I'll grill up a protein and then I go, well, I have this.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saute it all together and I eat it, and I'll mix all kinds of different vegetables together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it always tastes good. So,
yeah.
and it's easy.
So, Leslie, how did you get your start in the cooking industry?
Ooh. I kind of came at it really oddly. I did not cook at all until I was over 30.
Okay.
Yeah. I used to actually drive a truck.
Okay.
Believe it or not. And I hurt my back. And the government at that time would retrain you if you had a medical injury.
Right.
And so they asked me what I wanted to do. And basically, I had a list of things from my doctor I was going to be physically able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom line was I needed to be on my feet and moving around. And literally, the next job that was available at Manpower, the next course that was available through Manpower was cooking. And because I had been working with men for about 10 years, I thought, and this is how little I knew about the cooking industry, I thought, well, this would be okay. I'd work with women for a change.
Right.
And it wasn't until I got to the course that I realized, no, I was right back where I started from. And I went into class and I had never felt creative. I didn't ever think about anything like that. And it was a matter of not having the right medium. I don't sing. I don't dance. I don't paint or any of those things. But I do all that in the food.
Right.
And
right.
so it was finding my medium.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's what I always tell new cooks, actually, is that always think of your plate as your canvas
mm-hmm.
and the edges your border.
yep.
and put everything that's good in the middle there. So,
No, we're thinking about color and texture and, you know, all those things constantly. Mm-hmm. It's all very much part of it.
I think I learned it from you as the Christmas syndrome on a plate.
Yes. And I learned that from Bruno.
No matter what you do, put a little red and green, it'll always look right.
I do that at home. Even when I'm cooking dinner, I go, oh, there's not enough color in this.
Yes.
Yeah. It doesn't really matter, but I'm always aware of that too. It's funny. Yeah. You never lose it.
Yeah. No. Mm-hmm. It's balancing it. All that sort of stuff. Yeah. No, it's absolutely.
So you still a cook at home?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. I was talking to somebody just the other day about that. And I cook at home. I always have.
Always do.
Yeah.
That's
absolutely.
Great.
Yeah.
So you got favorite dishes?
Favorite dishes.
Besides that peach pie.
Peach pie, yeah. I like butter a lot. And that's probably why I work out so much. In fact, a staff member turned to me one day and said, well, you only put butter on one side of your bread today. That's different. favorite dishes. Well, I tend to eat chocolate for breakfast, but I'm not a big chocolate person.
Right.
If I'm going to eat something sweet, I eat it early. I like proteins. I am a meat eater, and I like vegetables. But, man, I don't know what I would eat.
There's no one dish. It's just whatever whatever you can create that day.
Yeah,
is that the...
Yeah. No, that comes and goes. Yeah. Very much of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love when people ask me, what's your specialty? And I'm always
it's what's
little,
in front of me.
I'm like, yeah, what's in front of me?
Yeah.
I like to think seafood sometimes, but I really...
Comes and goes.
Yes.
I mean, working with Wes and at the Shellfish Festival.
Oh, yes.
Okay, yeah, halibut, top of the list. You know? Absolutely. That
I
was
love
just
that
awesome.
Stuff. Yes.
It's
when it's
just
that
wonderful.
Fresh and that amazing, yeah.
Exactly. You know, but if I'm in Toronto and it hasn't been anywhere near an ocean for, you know, about 3 weeks, then no.
No.
I don't think so. Yeah.
So I'd love to start talking a little bit about the association, just talking about some of the events and stuff we get involved in.
Yes.
So
you do show up.
I do show up.
Yes,
I definitely,
you do show up.
I do
yes.
show up quite a bit, so
yeah.
I should take... Put
some
my name
credit.
To this a bit.
Yep.
So basically, the association is split into three different groups. We've got the associate members,
mm-hmm.
Junior members, and what's your
federation?
Federation members.
Federation members.
Which is basically Red Sealed chefs and working chefs. So the
junior program.
What can we say about that?
Well, some branches, they actually have a completely separate everything,
right.
Okay, for their juniors. But because we're relatively small, I think it's a decision that was made a couple of years before I came out here,
mm-hmm.
that they actually are incorporated in. I think it works well because then we do work together. We do have some juniors on our executive board.
Mm-hmm.
There are some positions where they wouldn't be allowed to take, but generally speaking, because these days there's so many people that are going back to culinary school for a second career, you cannot walk into a room and assume that everybody who's over 40 in that room is a federation member,
right.
And everybody under is a junior, because
true.
It's our median age for our federation is something like, I think, 45, and our median age for our juniors is 42.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
There's just because the way it works out.
It's a spectrum of different people.
Exactly.
People retrain and come back into the profession.
Yeah.
So.
At one point, we had the oldest junior actually in Canada. We don't anymore, but we did.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah. So when you've got people like that, so you can have someone who is in a second career, they come at it a little bit differently. So the juniors, a lot of the programs that we run are to support them for scholarships and bursaries and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of time, that's probably the single biggest thing that we raise money for. Our membership dues, we do send a portion to the national office.
Right.
We do keep a portion here, but our dues aren't particularly high for that. And our juniors, we really don't charge them very much.
No, it's pretty insignificant.
Yeah.
It's $20.
Yes, it's 20 because we want them to be involved more than anything else. We also have a very small associate group. And unlike a place like Vancouver, their associates are huge and they pay a lot of money, but they're corporate associates because that's a head office for a lot of companies. Whereas for us, our associates are the actual farmers, fishermen, people who are actually creating and making, growing these things. And so it's a little bit different than you would find at another kind of branch.
But it's definitely more interesting because you get to
get
the hands-on approach to this.
Well, the salad last night,
yeah.
the one with the fresh hazelnuts and the fresh blueberries.
Oh, man, that's
that delicious. Was amazing. Yes, yeah. So you get really extra bonus things like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, no, it was a fun night. So
yeah.
Yeah, so the juniors. And so bursaries is a big portion of the...
Big
portion of the association. I think how many... We do bursaries for...
Oh, gonna put we you do it spot. For the high schools, and we also do it for the college, and we also do it for the apprenticeship program as
right.
well.
So I think last year we gave out, what was it,
$2,500. In that range, yeah.
So, and we usually give that out every year, so there's definitely opportunity for people looking to get into the profession to get some money to help them along.
Right.
And this year we've also, Beyond the Kitchen Door, stepped up and offered bursaries as well with us and said, because they found that the students actually showed up with gift certificates because we had given some out at our installation dinner in June. And they realized that this actually had an impact. So it was kind of neat.
No,
that's something that's coming in.
Yeah, Beyond Kitchen Door has been a big supporter of ours. And it's great because they, well, I mean, they do a lot for the food industry. And just to go in there and be able to see all the equipment that you can possibly imagine is pretty neat, especially as a new cook.
Absolutely.
Coming into the profession.
It's a
you
big
know.
Toy store.
You can, it's a big toy store and you can just Google at those knives. And most cook knives aren't that cheap. So
it's
a couple $100 to invest into some good knives. Which
And it's hard when you're first starting out because you don't even know what you're supposed to be feeling.
Yes,
I still remember my first knife, and it was flat, and the weight was all wrong with it, and the tang didn't come into it properly. But I mean, you start somewhere.
You thought that was right, and
that was basically what
blisters
was
blisters and calluses.
Yeah, but it was more the feel. Like when you start using some that feel right, you know it, and you're like, oh, okay, this works.
Yeah,
it's like a really good pair of shoes.
And everyone has a different knife. I find like there's just finding that one that fits your hand that feels right. I know I'm notoriously for trading knives with or grabbing the knife that's closest to me when I'm running around the kitchen sometimes.
Yeah.
And I know there's always those some knives I pick them up. I'm like, why did you buy this?
Yeah. Those are in the camper usually. It's a good place for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing Beyond the Kitchen Door has helped us with is our cookbook.
Oh, absolutely. They were amazing.
Yes.
Actually, there's a couple things they've helped us with. Also, Pastor Day, too.
Oh, the Pastor Day was a big fundraiser for us. We raised a lot of money.
Yep.
And that was actually an easy and fun event for us.
That was a lot of fun. Yes, that one sold out, and they helped sell tickets, and then they came to the dinners as well. So it was perfect. The cookbook they sold for us, and they basically turned all the funds back to us, which was really nice. I mean, that's an amazing thing, and they did it for quite a while too. It wasn't just a short term thing. They allowed us in to do promotional stuff. No, it was good.
Yeah.
It was
good. Before you get too far, you should elaborate a little bit on that cookbook. People who aren't aware of
Island
that project.
Island Inspirations.
Yep, it is still available. We're getting down to I think about the last few cases. You know, James sends me out updates every once in a while.
So it was quite a success for us, I think, for a lot of work.
A lot of work.
A lot of work.
A lot of work. I think it was very eye-opening for most of us.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the thing about, you know, having to document
mm-hmm.
and check and figure out, you know, does this work, does this not, having to deal with deadlines.
Right.
It was a lot of work. I think the most fun part, and I know you were there the day that we did the photo shoot.
Oh, yeah.
And for most of us, it really was the first and only time we had done one like that.
Right.
And we did it at Locals, and we didn't really have anything, and I know I brought a lot of dishes and stuff like that to
mm-hmm.
do props and that, and but it was a very interesting learning curve.
Yeah, it was neat just to do.
Yes.
And it was neat to see those pictures have been used.
Yes,
all as advertising all for the Comox Valley. Yes. So you see them in all the brochures. So
and so that was, you guys were preparing your recipes for being for. Photographed?
Yes.
Okay.
There was, I believe, about half a dozen of us there.
Yep.
And we had a professional food stylist came in and helped us with it and that. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, it was fun. It was definitely different. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it was a whole different thing. As a matter of fact, I actually made the peach pie for it. It's in the cookbook.
Oh, is it?
There you go.
Well,
I forgot
the
that.
Cookbook at home.
And
so I'll be looking
at
it tonight.
I was actually measuring it to make sure that you'll notice there's a picture in there of I took it and I made it as a pie, and then I also made it in a glass.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Same thing, just different way of presenting it.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting on a chair in my kitchen trying to make sure that the lines are straight. So you know, oh no, that one's higher. Okay,
take
some.
Oh, yeah,
okay, no, that one's lower. Yeah. So that was really interesting. And then the other thing was that I put, I think, about six times as much gelatin in it as it calls for, because it had to. It was for photography. It was
right.
not to be eaten.
Yes.
And I know afterwards it was like, well, can we? Well, I don't think you're going to want to.
Yeah, it's not going to taste that good.
Yeah,
it was a little rubbery.
Yeah, just a little. But you know, all that, you know, thinking about all that kind of stuff, it was very different.
Yeah.
And John, I believe you did a hot dish, and that was tough. You did mussels, didn't
I
you?
I did. Actually, I did two. I did the mussels and the shrimp.
Yeah.
Potato, smoked salmon potato cake.
Oh, right.
That
yes.
was it, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
So that, it's actually amazing
mm-hmm.
how different it is to photograph food than it is to actually plate it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like, there's a lot of little things that just don't look good in a picture.
No.
Look good when they come down and sit in front of you
yep.
when you're sitting at a dining room table, but to actually photograph it, it just doesn't come out right.
You know, you don't get that height aspect with a photograph because mm-hmm. it's two-dimensional, mm-hmm. so...
Mm-hmm. And you can't smell it either.
You can't smell
it. Right.
Our smell, a sense of smell is huge. That's a big part of it. Yeah, I did the pasta one, and I still remember that trying to make it look so that it was fluffy. It's probably the wrong word, but that's, you know, you wanted it to have dimension, as you said.
Right.
So it's difficult.
So it's always a trick.
Next time it's a pop-up book.
Next, yes.
Next time,
boy.
Don't let me be involved.
Yeah.
I got a great idea.
Well, yes. better
3D glasses.
You can be involved.
Oh, yes, really. Yes.
I'll do the 3D.
You can
section.
Run with it.
Yeah. I think the trickiest bit was just lining up the chefs and keeping them on task. And we deadlined everything. I know I fired my recipes in that night. I think the deadline was 12 o'clock and mine were in at 11:37.
Yeah.
As I emailed them.
I've known John for a long time. That's pretty good.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's my standard.
Don't want to do it.
And one of the new things that you helped get going in the Valley here and with the Chefs Association is the Growing Chefs program.
Absolutely.
And now...
That one came at us, again, it's a funny way. I do volunteer work at Beyond the Kitchen Door sometimes because, for me, it's great to... go out and work with another chef. Okay, so I come in if they're bringing in someone who maybe doesn't have anyone to help them. They're from out of town or something like that.
Mm.
So I was there helping Dave Lang.
Mm-hmm.
That's who it was. And there was a student there, and her son was involved with Growing Chefs in Vancouver, and she's actually from the Valley.
Mm.
She asked me if when Sue mentioned that I was the president of the Chefs Association, she asked me if I would be interested you know, we would be interested in this program. So we sat down, we looked at it, and that's basically how it started. It was just a chance meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was implemented in two schools this spring.
Mm-hmm.
And that came about because it was a pilot project that they got funding for. And they normally would only go into one school, I believe, and I actually emailed them when they were asking for possibilities and that, and said, "Do you realize, of course, we do work in two languages. We have several French speaking members," and of course they went, "Oh, great, okay."
Right.
So they put us into two schools, right, English and French, and that actually put a whole different dimension to it.
Mm-hmm.
When the trainer came over from Vancouver to train everyone to go in, she said that she had never seen such a large group of volunteers. And my answer to her was, I said, everybody in this room is the type of person, when they make a commitment, they follow through. And they're all doing five or six other full-time things.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the only way that they would commit to it is that if we could set up a system whereby if they really could not be there, there was someone to cover them.
Right.
So I believe we had something like 12 people at the training session.
Hmm.
And it ultimately ended up being three in each school.
Right.
I believe. No, actually it doesn't. It was four in one school and three in the other.
And we actually haven't even told everyone what this is about. This was going into the classroom and teaching the kids how to grow food and cook it. From the ground all the way up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, my daughter participated in it.
Oh, I was really?
In Cumberland School.
Yeah.
And she just thought it was so fun. She brought home a few plants we put in the garden, and
mm-hmm.
and they got to make some stuff. And
yeah,
it was really cool.
Yeah. And both programs, the nice thing about something like Growing Chefs is that they give you the framework, they give you the binders and an outline, but you can run with it. And it ended up that each school, the people that went into it did something fairly unique to them. Mm-hmm. So you could make it your own. And that's what makes it that kind of program really special, because what happened in Cumberland was different than what happened in Comox.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so, and that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
That was really nice.
Yeah, yep. Natalie kept saying, "You got to find out what their pea soup recipe was." I can't remember what she said about it, but she thought it was so funny.
Yeah.
Said it tasted like, I wish I could remember what she said.
Yeah.
But anyway, she really liked it.
They did I think both of them ended up doing a field trip, both schools.
Yes, I believe so. You're right.
One of them went to Laura Agnew's farm, I believe, and the other one went to Innisfree.
Oh, right. Perfect.
Yeah, I believe so, anyway.
Yeah, I think she did go on a field trip to a farm, but I can't recall now which.
Yeah, which just, again, added an extra dimension to it, mm-hmm. which is great.
Yeah.
Both great farms in this way.
No, I think it's really important to get children involved in the kitchen and just learning how to cook, because it's such a life skill that... You know, if you can grow up and you can make some things, you're not eating out of a box all the time, and that grows that interest and the skill building.
It was interesting because the program that went on in Comox, the first day was that they were supposed to take in I believe it was seeds to identify them.
Right.
Was what was written in the outline. And Terry Vrain from Innisfree Farms decided that, that sounded a little boring. So he took it upon himself. He brought in things that the kids would see from the supermarket.
Mm.
So he brought in a jar of mustard. Said, "Do you know what this is?" And then he produced a seed for it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So he did this with a whole box of things.
Oh, wow.
And it was perfect, because the kids could make the association then.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a seed that, got planted and that's neat and it sprouts, but it's got nothing to do with what we buy at the grocery store.
Right.
So that was allowing these really creative people to be creative.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's nice.
Yeah.
Excellent. And so we haven't actually touched upon it yet, but the CCFC, which is sort of the parent of our association here.
Yeah.
Just a little bit about that.
It's the CCFCC is the Canadian Culinary Federation, and it is across Canada. We are also members of what is called WACS, which is the World Association of Chef Societies.
Mm-hmm.
And it covers, oh dear, I don't remember how many countries. I think it's 93 or something. Mm-hmm. It's a lot.
It's a big number, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably the single best thing about something like the CCFCC or WACS is that once you join here, you have your ticket into any of these other places too. Because now you've got an association that if you go into Melbourne, Australia, or you go into Frankfurt, Germany, and you tell them that you're a member, you're all a member of the same group.
Right.
And also there's a lot of networking involved within that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And as an example, again, the national body does a lot of things for the juniors.
Mm-hmm.
They just had an exchange program where it was an open competition. Any junior could apply. And the prize was 2 weeks in the Okanagan cooking at different established restaurants,
mm-hmm.
wineries, going into a goat farm, being part of their Feast of Fields. So lots of things like that.
Right.
So,
wow. Fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great opportunity. So.
Yep. So once you hook into something like that, you know, again, if somebody comes to me and says, I am moving to Nova Scotia or I am moving to Japan, and I've done this myself, I've traveled in Australia and I've contacted the branches out there and met with them.
Right.
Because, you know, you can just email them. It's in this day and age, it's easy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
No, it was, I did the national meeting in Vancouver.
Oh, in Vancouver last
year. Yes,
yeah.
Which was my first real introduction to the national, or to the CCFC.
Yeah.
Just because I was really more involved in the local thing. And mm-hmm. for me, I wanted to really be involved in what was happening in Courtney.
Yes.
Even though it's a whole North Island. But that was really my draw. And then to go to the national meeting, which you convinced me that I had to go, even though I was like, I don't know, I got to get time off.
Yeah.
And I think I caught a ferry and managed to find a bus ride there and ended up walking like 10 blocks and I got off at the wrong stop.
Oh, no.
And I showed up there and I'm a little intimidated because there's all these chefs sitting out there having a little coffee break outside. And I'm like, you know, out of breath. And I'm like, is this the Chefs Association national meeting? And they're like, oh yeah, where are you from? And I was welcomed right in there and I started chatting with these guys and I had no idea who they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there were some pretty
big
important names.
Yes.
And for me just to sit into, you brought me into
yes.
the president's meeting.
I
and
did. Yep.
Sitting in the back and other than my phone going off in the middle of it, which was a little embarrassing.
Yeah.
I was sort of in awe sitting there in between these amazing yeah. characters and these chefs that, you know, yeah, I have
especially
a lot
when
of
I told you who you were sitting beside.
Yeah, when you were, that's wow. Yeah. I could spend yeah. all day dropping names of people
yeah.
that were there, but it was really impressive. And just to see the issues that were yeah. that were going on there and what they want to do to unite the whole organization.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. Yeah. When, and they're all the same things that we're doing here, really.
Yeah.
You know, the whole local movement, the whole, you know, the industry as a whole. Because, I mean, I know that the first thing that John and I say when we sit down is like, okay, so how's the staffing doing?
Right.
You
yeah.
know, and it's something that's universal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty much everybody has a problem with staffing and stuff and what, you know, what's going on with the whatever food commodity is coming down next.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. and those are all things that we all talk about and that we all know about. And you can be anywhere and still have the same conversation.
It's a common
yes.
issue for chefs worldwide, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Perfect. So what do you see the future of the Chefs Association?
In the
Valley?
In the Valley? Oh, absolutely. It's adjusted a little bit. We've seen, a change in the membership in the last 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, part of that is a reflection of the industry itself.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, I think, is just the way that we're going about doing things. We we're a little bit more out there, I think, as far as talking to people and just welcoming them in and raising our profile. I think this Flavors event is something that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we were very adamant that we wanted the farmers market to be involved and to actually have a stake in it, that, you know, that was the only way that it could work.
Right.
So it's not just that we're going into different places like the farmers market and that sort of thing and doing volunteer work. It's that we're actually drawing them into what we're doing as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely that networking thing is expanding and bringing more people into it, I see. So.
Yeah. And doing the growing chefs thing, as you say, the Farmer's Day, we also do go out to different tours. We have workshops fairly regularly. There's just so many things out there that there are to do that are fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's given a great detail of the association. There's probably another 2 hours worth of conversations we could have.
Yep.
But that's been a lot of fun. You want to ask your favorite question?
What's your favorite thing about the Comox Valley? What keeps you living here? And
my husband and I chose to be here.
Right.
We didn't kind of land to. We actually did a bike tour.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that we were leaving Vancouver. It had been. I'm actually from the South Island.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. But we knew that we left there 20 years ago, and we knew that it didn't exist, at least in our minds, what was there.
Right.
And so we did a bike trip up around Seashell, Powell River, over to here.
Yeah.
And we really weren't sure where we were going.
Right.
And when we came here, we went, this is right. And the second thing was that I looked around at what the food industry was doing here and how everybody was so connected to it.
Right.
It's doing food, but it's also, as you notice, you have your growing and your catching fish. It's just everything. Both pieces are
right
here. And I think that it's got to the point now where the ball is moving and it's picking up. So not only are the people that are here interested in that, but the people that are actually choosing to come here because that ball is getting so big and so tight.
Yeah.
So it's actually becoming a draw of its own.
Yeah, I met a couple this summer while I was strawberry picking from Victoria who were just blown away and they're so excited they're moving up here. They're probably here now, I don't know, but that was one of the reasons why they came here and just fell in love and had to move here. There's so much good food and just the right place they want to raise their family. And
All the normal things about being able to, was it golf and ski and all that. But I think that just the whole environment, and it's not just cooking, it's also the music environment all the other things that go with it. The fact that there's a lot of people that are very creative here and that are willing to do something a little bit different in order to make the whole work.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, it's really a unique, there's a lot of unique things happening and it's...
There's always something happening here. I find every weekend you can find an event or a function or something exciting happening. So
you just have to get out there.
That's right.
Yeah.
Great. And our big one we should talk about.
Yeah.
Flavor.
You guys ready?
No.
I'm getting a little frightened, actually.
Yeah. It's exciting. I know my email list gets longer every day. Longer every day, yeah. But ideas, matching people up, people, are getting excited about it.
Yeah.
I find anyway, I'm noticing that, is that people are actually talking about people that aren't necessarily what I would consider foodies or necessarily in the industry they're actually talking about. I know there's several people out there, and by several, I mean a couple dozen, who are really in big trouble because they forgot to buy tickets or they missed them.
Yeah. You're looking right at me.
Yeah.
Someone had to volunteer to help out.
Yeah.
Actually, the truth, my wife she's got some friends coming out from Germany that are out there, and I think they bought the last round of tickets because they phoned in
Yeah.
Or I said, did you get your tickets? And they're like, well, my brother phoned this morning. I'm like, well, I just got an email that they just sold out. So it turned out he got like the last five tickets maybe. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lucky.
Yeah.
So they sold really fast, which was a bit of a surprise for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because I know we'd had some meetings where we were talking about,
well, what do we do now?
Selling up to this point and it might be smaller than we think.
Yeah.
But
and then bam, it was done.
It was there. Yeah. Absolutely. We went from 300 to 500 very quickly.
Yes.
That really jumped. Yeah.
It was right after we had Beth in on the podcast.
So. I think that might have something to do with it.
Of course.
I think so.
Yes.
Just a couple of days afterwards. So.
That's right.
Yeah. No, that always helps.
So I think this is going to be a pretty incredible event with just showcasing the Comox Valley.
Absolutely.
And the food. So.
I think there's a lot of people that are going to really give it their best shot. And that's really all that's necessary is because everything is already here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of showing it.
Just a matter of assembling it. I think that's what I'm coming. My nervousness is coming to.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of work for you and all the other vendors and chefs that are going to be there. It's
Because we're looking at about 700 portions, well, 600 to 700 portions of each. They don't have to be big.
Yeah.
Just a nice bite size, but
it's
still a lot.
That's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work. So.
That's a lot
How many
of work.
Salmon do you think you're going to use, John?
I worked it out and I get probably about 50 to 60 slices per side. So I'm going to have two cases there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Two cases of salmon. So about 50 pounds of salmon is what I'm looking at. So.
And how many people are you taking?
Right now I have two that are... Well, actually, I have myself and Connie is going to come.
Oh,
because they decided that she is much better at designing tables and setting them up than I am.
Right.
Yes.
So yeah, and then I've got a couple other people at work that are showing interest, but my biggest concern right now is putting in a schedule that can keep the cafe going.
Right.
That's kind of what I think everybody is sort of looking at and going, okay, so we're going to be gutted in terms of staff. What do we do now?
Yeah, we should have Flavor Day in the Comox Valley where the restaurant just closes.
Yeah.
It's a holiday for all the chefs.
Not that many owners would be happy about that.
No,
probably not.
Yeah.
But they can jump on the line and look after it if they want to.
Yeah, really.
Well, that's what's happening at the Atlas because Trent will be online that day for sure. So.
Yeah.
So I owe him a big one for that to allow me to go to this. So,
Well, and there's also all the pre-work, you know, set up and all that sort of thing and getting things ready. I know that the college is great because they've got the students are organized. They actually change some of their days so that it's considered mandatory in their course structure.
Yeah.
So,
excellent.
Yeah. For the culinary students, which is great. They need the exposure. It'll be perfect.
Yep.
And it's one of those things, if they don't go to, they're going to be like, oh, I missed it. I blew it.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Plus, if you're getting into the culinary world, you know Monday to Friday isn't the reality.
It's
so you might as well be ready to work whatever day.
No.
Yep.
So it's just how it is.
Yeah. Don, it's a nice venue up there.
Yeah.
At Coastal Black. So it will probably be really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. I'm looking forward to it. Stressing, but I'm looking forward.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. I think we'll all be glad, as I said, when September's over.
True enough.
This has been a lot happening.
Happening this September, for sure.
So. You think August is busy, and then September comes in, it's just as busy.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, the Atlas is just as busy, isn't it? You haven't seen a big dip.
You guys don't get a down.
We have a little dip.
Yeah.
Basically, knock a half an hour off everyone's shift, and that's about it. So.
Yeah.
But... Lucky for me.
Yeah.
Keep me employed, so.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the way you look at it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Is there any other events that you can think of?
Well, I know
this kind of dwindled out here.
I know we always talk about events happening. I know there's a couple events, but I don't know the dates or the times. There's Cumberland's having
a fall fest type of thing.
Fall festival. There's some pie competitions and sort of a harvest festival event, but I don't know the dates of what's happening with that. I just found out about it today.
Right.
And what else? Oh, with the Chefs Association, we are doing the October meeting with GO2, which is sort of the group that oversees the apprenticeship program and sort of
the outreach. They do a lot of
the outreach.
Yeah.
They're a great resource for people in the hospitality industry because they deal with not just cooks, but servers and all those ranges.
Yeah.
But they're coming up to give a chat about apprenticeship hours and what you can use as apprenticeships and what you can't.
Right.
Also, one of the most important things that we're looking at is that in order for a student to have to get their apprenticeship hours, they have to work with a Red Seal chef.
Right.
At least that's the understanding. In actual fact, they can have an approved chef. So what we're trying to do is bring up Dennis Green from GO2 to actually go into different places and to meet with chefs and basically walk through their day, you know, meet with them and approve them.
Right. Yeah.
So that because there's lots of people in the industry that don't have their Red Seal that have been doing it for a while and you know, have their food safe, have everything else, and are fully capable of training someone.
Mm-hmm.
But the student needs to have that plus the trainer. So
right.
That will be a big deal.
There definitely is a lot of amazing chefs out there that aren't papered.
Yeah,
they just have the passion and have been doing it.
In every trade too.
You got
guys that have been carpenters for 40 years that never went to school, but they know how to do everything and more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's just not worth it for them to go to school because you're challenging a test that's all technical and government written, and you don't know the technical name so much, but you know how to lay out everything. Anyways.
It's also very expensive.
Yes.
For a lot of them. A lot of them, it's an expense thing that they can't afford.
It's a huge cost, and there's no real... You're not going to gain much back from doing it, so...
Aside from having a certificate.
The biggest reason is usually to have your certificate so that you can take apprentices on.
Right.
But the problem now is that we don't have that many Red Seals or enough of them, and so the students are out there looking for getting to be able to get hours, and they can't get them.
Okay. Yeah.
So then now you're standing there saying, well, I'd like to hire an apprentice, but the apprentice isn't interested in working for you because they're not going to get credit for it.
Right.
And so we're trying to figure out a way to alleviate that problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because when you start an apprenticeship, you want to get the hours and get it done.
You want to get the hours, yeah, absolutely.
So you don't want to monkey around working for somebody for 3 years and not get... You'll get experience, but you won't get the...
You won't get credit for it.
You won't get credit, yeah.
Yeah.
So this next meeting is going to be open to everyone.
Yes.
And we actually don't have a location yet, do we? Or is it's not confirmed?
Not today. No, it's not confirmed.
So we won't say anything, but you'll be able to find that out on the North Vancouver Island Chefs Association website.
Or Facebook.
And Facebook. Because everyone Facebooks now.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Yes. We're actually up to this century, I think. Yeah.
Before we get out of this interview, I should mention that for dinner tonight, we had a cottage roll. Is that what it was called?
Yes.
Cottage roll.
Ham.
A ham, yes. That was given to us by DKT Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing.
It was fabulous. Oh, so.
Really?
Yeah. Could have eaten the whole thing myself.
Yeah. Oh. I think you did. I think you actually stole a piece from your daughter.
Yeah. She wasn't going to finish it.
Oh.
Do you know what a cottage roll is? Is it a pork butt that's hammed, or are you?
I've heard of it, but I couldn't.
Yeah,
I've done it.
Yeah, Ryan told me, but I can't remember now what it was. It had a lot of fat in it, so it makes me think it was a butt.
I think it's a butter end, but I could be wrong.
Yeah,
not a strong butcher.
Yeah. It was delicious.
Yeah.
So if you want an interesting ham, go to DKT Ranch and ask them for a cottage roll and give it a shot.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And thank you for donating that, guys.
Yes.
Got me to practice.
Yeah.
We've actually done well because we had Butcher's Block donated some sausages to us as well.
Yep.
And we've had, we have some sausages from Tannadice Farms from our last episode, which will be frying up in the near future to give a little sample and give some, see how we appreciate them. So
I appreciate it.
Yes.
That's
so good.
Thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. Check out our website, ediblevalley.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook and follow our Twitter feed at Edible Valley. Email us with your comments or who you'd want us to have on the show, ediblevalley@gmail.com. Don't forget, we have a donate button on our site. If you want to help us with our hosting costs or sponsor pregame meal, feel free to do so. Thanks for listening, and remember, keep it local.